Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Transformation Cafe with your host, Robin Misevich. Transformation Cafe, a weekly half hour of light, topical conversation about health, wellness, happiness, personal growth, spirituality, and other insights. We're glad you're here. Transformation Cafe, a fun place to nourish your soul. Now, let's get started and introduce our diners for tonight's show.
Well, I want to welcome everybody to the Transformation Cafe. I'm your host, Robin Misevich, and tonight we are back in the Cafe Book Club. We are on How Getting the Love You Really Want, and by Harville Hicks and his lovely wife, Helen Hunt. There she is. Yep, it popped in my head. Helen Hunt. So tonight we're in Chapter 9, and it's about increasing your knowledge of yourself and your partner. And the title to me is kind of a little, misleading, I think. I don't know. Maybe it's just a little, we can figure out if that's really true. So, I love the quote. It said, "And ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free." That was John 8:32. So, we'll go ahead and get my lovely co-host on tonight. So we have Miss lovely Amy. Hey, Amy Frost, how are you doing tonight?
I'm in need of some validation.
I think we get critical about that, and then we'll figure out if that really works for you.
Well, I'm out of here.
And our other lovely, lovely host, Miss Michelle. Miss Michelle, are you tonight?
Woo-hoo! I'm ready to listen and be your mirror.
Oh, I love it.
Thank you so much. I'm gonna get the Windex out and polish that sucker up. Okay, we're good to go. The beginning of this chapter talks about this wonderful experience that Harville had with a couple that had come into the office. And the guy, Gene, was this corporate guy that basically was the man at the helm of his business, his corporation. And he really just empowered. He was just very overpowering. Not empowering, but he was empowering to himself. But very overpowering to pretty much everybody that he worked with, and including his lovely wife, Jean. And they wound up having a where Jean really couldn't have much. He'd start, talking about different things. And, Judy would start talking about things. And Jean would just jump in and talk about how it wasn't true and this is her and all that. So it really was this whole story about each person's perspective and how we really have, if we can't really come from an open-mindedness, we're really not going to see what's really going on. And he wound up playing this classical music for them to listen to. And then he asked them how he says, listen to this and tell me if something, some kind of a picture comes into your head about what it's stirring in you, maybe how you thought about it after we listened to it. And Gene, of course, was very, high and, coming from a very music perspective on that, with, having all the proper, terminology and everything that he used with the music and things like that, and talked about how lovely it was and all that. And then Judy, we talked about how it was just really stormy, and she was just saying it really brought up a lot of, turbulence and struggle and things like that, listening to it. And, of course, Gene reprimanded her, saying, that's not what it was. It was this quiet music kind of thing. And so Harville had them listen to it again and say, just kind of listen to other parts of the music that you hadn't heard the first time. And come to find out, both of them had listened to other parts and started to agree with each other that it was different. And for Harville, he was really happy that it wound up being a payoff for the couple, because they actually started realizing that just because they listened to once or saw something from a particular perspective doesn't mean it couldn't change or broaden it, listening to someone else's perspective of what that was like for that other person. So I'd love for you guys to elaborate on that and see where we go. So go ahead, Amy or Michelle, do it.
Well, let me just dive in where you talked about originally about increasing your knowledge of yourself and your partner, which honestly is just a really boring title. But, when you look at it, and really interesting, a few weeks ago I got called to go into a business to do a workshop on unconscious bias, which I haven't done yet. I really think this chapter, that's what this is really about, I think, right? We've been leaning into is that unconscious decisions that we make, which is really, right, it shows up as perceptions. And, again, I have a different version than you guys do, but I have under here under hidden sources of knowledge, It says, when you accept limited nature of your own perceptions, become more receptive to the truth of your partner's perceptions, a whole new world opens up to you. So I think
Go ahead. Well, I just loved how they both had the same exact experience, but listening to the music, but they had two totally different perceptions. And then Harville actually, when after each one explained their point of view, he asked them, now let's listen to it again and look for ways to prove your partner's viewpoint.
I love that.
Yeah, which I think is a really good tool in any situation, is to become the advocate for your partner to help us to expand.
Yeah, I think that's right.
And something that I don't even know where I picked this up, but it's something that I use all the time for myself and in working with others, but trying not having a fixed way of being, is talking about I having a viewing point instead of a point of view.
That is nice.
Yeah, and like brush your teeth with the opposite hand. Mm-hmm. Take a different route home. That all these kinds of practices help you to see your world with new eyes every day. Because we see it in a certain way, we're not really open to seeing it with the eyes of another. And I just need to publicly right now apologize to Robin last week, because I made the classic mistake of what the husband did. And Robin opened the show last week saying, this chapter is about making lists. And I said, nah, it's about this. And the truth is, they're both true. And I invalidated her viewpoint. So thank you for reading chapter 9 so that I could catch that in myself and apologize and, you know, become better.
Thanks, Jean.
Thanks, Jean, for being my teacher.
Thanks, Jean. We love you, Jean. Okay.
Eugene, by telling your story, you just helped another right over here. Her name's Michelle.
Well, I think I want to kind of broaden the conversation for just a second because, you know, here we do this show on May 29th, and Starbucks closed their doors for the day to do a show, I mean, basically to do some training, you know, when it comes to racism. Mm-hmm. And really isn't racism, depending on how you want to look at it, but to me, for perspective, is just those ways that we don't really are open-minded to seeing one another.
Look at those unconscious bias. You may not,
right,
you know,
unconscious
see
bias
that
we're
yourself.
Talking about.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, but we all have those things. And
right.
The trick is to be able to slow yourself down enough, like Michelle just did, right, to catch, oh, wow, I did that.
I did a gene. I didn't
her
even know it.
Good. I, you know, I trust Michelle. I know her intent is always good. And we all, you know, those unconscious things just kind of, they run ahead of us. If you got it, however you want to make sense of that. And they're like, oh, my God, I can't believe I just did that.
Yeah.
I just think that's beautiful. I was saying it's a viewing point instead of a point of view.
It really helps me. I kind of imagine myself involved in it and separate from it at the same time. That, you know, I mean, and of course, my viewpoint is very important to me at this moment. But if I'm willing... You know, that my point of view, but if I'm willing to get to a viewpoint and really listen, I may learn something and I may grow and change, like, you know, Michelle just beautifully showed for us. And, you know, I think that's one of the things I've learned over time is that, okay, I may be strongly believe this at this moment, but if I'm willing to be open in 5 minutes from now, I can have a totally different way of looking at it.
Or like even, you know, in the next moment.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is in your version, but I just love this sentence. He talks about, as you add to your growing fund of knowledge, you're creating reality love, a love based on emerging truth of yourself and your partner, not on romantic illusion. And even in friendship or work relationship, I think it's, you know, romantic in the terms of, you know, this happily ever after, nobody ever argues, nobody ever has conflict. Do you know what I mean? To be able to, you know, and I really loved the way this growing and creating reality love.
Hmm. Yeah, that's not
that's
in our version.
That is not in ours, yeah.
That's beautiful.
We all went, eh, you know, but I love that. I really like that whole idea of our reality love. Yeah.
And and to allow our differences in all relationships, instead of them being a source of difference or conflict, or for them to just bring us into more expansion, like to
mm-hmm.
add to us, to
mm-hmm.
bring it, to bring things to more layered, because reality is very complex.
Mm-hmm.
There's many, many different realities overlaying other realities,
and they're
all
maybe
happening at one time.
And you get so fixated on one, you don't allow yourself to let those others unfold.
Yeah, and that takes an open heart.
Amen. And a lot of courage.
Mm-hmm.
You may find something you don't want to do.
And it's a mindfulness, too. You know, just like Michelle was saying, you know, I'm going to brush my teeth with my opposite hand. You know, I'm gonna go drive a different way than I normally do to work or to school or whatever. So I'm just changing my perspective of just a little bit, so I can like mm-hmm. think and be more open-minded to just everything, the beginner's mind of what all that is.
Well, let me read you a couple more sentences, which you guys may or may not have, which I found really helpful. Just,
I don't have
you
it.
Have,
I know, I already know I don't have it. I know.
All right, okay, then. Write it in, right? You have the opportunity to become more aware of the hidden agenda that you bring to your relationship, of your disowned character traits, of your partner's inner world, and of the healing potential of your relationship.
Yes, we do.
Yeah, we have that one.
So the last week, I was in a ruck march, which is a backpack for soldiers who had lost their lives. And well, it was for 162 miles, I was either walking or I was in the logistics vehicle going 2 miles an hour. So I would be in the car or walking with different people. And there are people that I've known for quite a while that in those very slow movement, in that stillness, a lot of times it was me and another person, I know more and deeper levels of several people than I did before those 4 days. And
mm-hmm.
I understand things about myself and my relationship with them that I didn't know before I had that kind of quality time. It seemed like it was, oh, my God. But the payoff was really huge.
Mm, that's really cool. You know, and I think that's a really good metaphor for being able to walk with somebody in conversation, commitment to communicating, and moving forward with one another.
And I love he talks about how can we turn a heated argument into useful information. I mean, what if we started to look at things that way? If somebody's getting frustrated, upset, whatever, that they're here, something is bubbling up for us to grow from together.
Yay.
Well, if
well, yeah, somebody starts bubbling up, we're like, yay, this is going to be good.
but listen, truthfully, if somebody starts to tell you something that's critical, usually what happens is we tighten up.
Oh, yeah.
And then we defend, and then we say, no, no, that's not me, that's you.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a whole new way of really, like, opening yourself up to all of the ammo and seeing what grain of truth is there when that criticism is coming at you, usually in an accusatory manner.
Amen. Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah,
and can we be brave enough to put down all of our arms and defenses and just be vulnerable and surrendered to letting that come in?
Mm-hmm.
And then asking what's true.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that you have to take a breath for that.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So the asking what is true. Yeah, The Asking What Is True reminded me of Byron Katie, and we've talked about her on the show before, and her book called Loving What Is. And she's got these different steps of when you're in a relationship with something and something happened, you know, one of the things she encourages you to do, and part of the steps of doing an inquiry, is to do the turnaround. And you actually ask yourself, when you've got the situation happening, is that true within yourself? And seeing if that's really something that's coming up, and what do I need to know about that? And being able to take the ownership instead of having it be reflective, you're reflecting back to yourself and coming from a place of just really of self-inquiry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's a rich field to use that if we can, when that's coming at us. And it leads him to his first principle about the hidden sources of knowledge, that most of your partner's criticisms of you have some basis in reality.
Yep.
And he says, in those moments, there's four questions he asks us to ask ourselves so that we can find out where this originates.
So I think
he has four major principles to gather the knowledge in these types of interactions. And that's the first one. And then, Robin, do you want to talk about the other ones?
Sure. So
yes.
The second principle is, you know, it's really coming from that perspective that looking at when somebody's repetitively, you know, coming up with criticisms to you, that they're really disguised as statements of unmet needs. So really looking at the second principle is the fact that these criticisms are actually unmet needs for yourself. So really, I question within that principle, that number two, is in what way is that true for me? That I have, that something's coming up for me, be able to look at it. Part of the underlining part of the pair, you know, this section of the chapter was talking about a wife that was being very critical of her husband because he was very cluttered. He was very unkempt and he was disorganized. And, you know, part of that was the outward criticism is actually parts of yourself that could be in a place that being cluttered is actually a trigger for you. And part of the unmet needs with that was, as a child, you know, did that person have it where the parents were very disorganized and it gave them little time and energy to be able to pay attention to you as a child because they were always cleaning or losing or whatever they had to do to be dealing with the fact that that was something that was a part of their, you know, being disorganized. You weren't being able to get the needs that you needed because of your parents. So it was a trigger she accuses him of. Go ahead, Anne.
So it's a great place to start, you know, maybe a journal where you start noticing those repetitive emotional criticisms of your partner. I think one of the first things to do is just to start noticing and maybe jotting it down and seeing, you know, how often you're doing that.
Mm-hmm.
How many times do you want to bring that up and there's something that triggers you? Yeah, yeah.
If you're
it's always that.
You got to find a way to see it.
It's always that little thing that, you know, it's never what you fight about, right? Yeah, we say that when it comes to relationships. When there's something that comes up as a trigger, it's never about the thing that you think you're fighting about, because that's always an interesting thing. And, you know, again, going back to Byron Katie with that whole turnaround, you know, in what way is that true for me? And looking at the projection of that. You know, how am I projecting that out to somebody else and being able to look at that? So principle three said, you know, some of the repetitious emotions, the criticism might be an accurate description of a disowned part of ourselves. So sometimes that reminded me of the artist Way when Julia Cameron talks about the shadow artist, how so many people will actually have someone else in their lives when they could be an artist or they could be a writer or whatever you do with it, just a way that you express with your you know, gifts and talents, that you actually support someone else in it instead of doing it yourself. And I thought that was a very interesting thing about, you know, so going back to the you know, being disorganized, are there ways that you beat yourself up because you are disorganized and want to be better at that? So, you know, you take fault at another person because it's something within yourself that you want to be able to culture, to nurture for yourself, and you just don't make time or really want to own that part of yourself. How about number four, Amy? You want to take number four?
Let's go back to three for a minute. So for myself personally, what I would project is perfectionism. And and it took me a while to see that I was doing that, and that I would that was something that I needed to work on. That I was so wrapped around the axle, making everything so perfect, that I really wasn't paying attention to the effect of the relationships. And so it took a while, but I honestly did. I did a journal of patterns for a couple of months, and I started really realizing that that was projecting that all over the place.
Mm.
But it took me a while to see it.
Yeah.
Then number four, here are some of your criticisms of your partner may help you to identify your own lost self. Amen.
This is where I get confused between what's the difference between your lost self and your disowned self.
Well, it's a good question. Let's kind of play with that a while. I think your lost self, it gets hidden in it. Let me see how do I'm just trying to throw some words at it. I feel it in my heart, but I'm not sure how to put it to words. That
yeah.
because you know, right? That it's lost because it hasn't been acknowledged. Maybe does that make sense? I don't.
So the disowned is that they know that this thing exists, but they're putting it onto their partner, and the lost is they're not even aware of it in any form at all.
That's a good way to put it. I don't know if that's true for them, but we can keep dancing with this.
Yeah, I've read it over several times in the book, and it just for me, you know, I just know that whenever it comes to those two things, I do find it a little confusing. But not that we have to spend that much time, but that is
exactly
one thing that I do notice for myself.
So that might be fun, something for us to just kind of be open to having that come to us.
Yeah.
But yeah, disowned and I think there's got to be a difference between there is a part that's there and disowned and the lost. Let me play with that. You can play with that. Let's see, maybe in the next, you know, session or two, it'll pop up for us.
Well, I know for me, this is talking about it, because in chapter 8, there was a section that talked about denial, and it was about, you know, places that, you know, you got to a point where you didn't even recognize that it was a part of you anymore. So
mm-hmm.
it was a lost self, because it was such a place where you had to protect yourself that you, after a while, you didn't even acknowledge it.
Mm.
You were in so much denial about it, it wasn't even present in your consciousness anymore. It was very subconscious.
So the disowned is that you know it's there, but it's just so uncomfortable that you project it out?
For the disowned, yeah. I think disowned is something like we're talking about with the disorganized, to being disorganized. It's such a place of, like, feeling lost that you really disown yourself. But when it's lost, you're in denial and don't even have, you know, it's subconscious.
It's truly gone under the radar.
Okay.
So we'll play with that. We're playing.
We could ask, let's ask Carvel. Okay. No.
Well,
I'm going to call him up and talk about that. Hey, Carvel, I have a question for you. All right, we'll go for that. Okay. With the fourth principle, there's a stretching exercise, which I think is really great. This is in the first edition. It talks about taking knowledge of the mutual criticism and converting it to being effective and growth-providing processes. And gosh, think of that. I mean, wouldn't that be great for everybody if anybody gives you criticism? That could be so devastating to have any kind of level of criticism and to be able to find that way to converting it to where it's effective and actually growth, you know, growth-producing for you. That's, you know, such an amazing thing. Have you done that exercise, Michelle?
You're talking about the Imago dialogue? Is that what you're talking about, Ron?
No, it was a growth stretch. It's called stretching. It was an exercise with that Harville had talked about.
I did it about a year ago, and I don't really remember what it is right now, because they basically tell you, please read the whole book. Before you do the exercise. So I haven't really gone back to it as of late. But we'll get to it next chapter and talk about it. So we'll see what that's about.
Okay. So let's play with that for next week. That'll be good.
And we've just got a few minutes left. I think it'd be good if we could go through the Imago dialogue, because I think that is such a important part, so people can kind of play with that during this next week.
Okay.
We've talked about it before, but it's just kind of going into the parts of it. It's interesting. I've done a lot of customer service training, been in it and done training, And the three different steps they talk about is mirroring, the validation, and empathy, which I think is really the heart, of course, of any good communication, but definitely a good part of customer service.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just dive in here. Go ahead.
I was going to say, so I hear you saying you want to have a steel-built attire. Okay, no. You're not really into those flat jobs. You want something with steel belt. Okay. Anyway.
Mm-hmm. Well, he says, you know, turn it into an exercise in communication, not confrontation. So that's what the mirror exercising is. And he ran it with somebody who they just had a normal conversation. And the person who was responding, who was just supposed to repeat and make sure that they got an understanding and the emotions, kept on saying things like, well, I'm sorry, like they tried to apologize. And then the next time they tried to solve it, and he's like, no, 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 all you have to do is repeat it back so that you are clear that you understood it and the emotional content both, and that he's actually seen people get energized when they're responded to in this way. Like, it gives you life vitality.
Yeah, I can see that. It really, you know, cuts you free from not being seen and heard.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we talked on the past and on the show about that, about, you know, our ultimate basic needs is to be seen and to be heard.
Yeah.
You know? And how important
that is.
To
be loved and accepted, that we don't have to, like, cut off any part of ourselves to be loved and accepted. We can just be who we are.
Mm-hmm.
That is so healing.
And, I mean, what a powerful thing to be able to cut all the crap out. You know, like, he did a beautiful job in that dialogue of helping him get to the really clear, this is what I mean. And so there wasn't a whole lot for her to feed back.
Yeah, he got it down to a simple statement that he was saying, because it was a little convoluted at first, and he was like, okay, let's simplify that so she can definitely get the message.
in the conversation, he talks about, you know, now, and Hendrick says, now try to feed that back to him with a receptive warmth. And she said, I think I'd rather stop smoking.
Yeah.
You know,
we're being honest, authentic. Yeah.
It's, you know, if you're really for this conscious partnership, it's both parties. If you want them to be able to mirror to you, try to make the mirror as simple as possible.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So knowing that it's both parties in this, you know, in this relationship. And then, we're rounding third here, or even hitting home. But again, that validation, which, again, see me, hear me, so important. And so few people get that. I think a whole lot of the world's problems would be solved if people did feel, you know, that they were validated and that people really were empathetic, you know, towards them.
Well, I think one thing with this exercise, too, is that, you know, it can be a very long-lasting and important consequence of the mirroring, because he says, the exercise is, it begins to heal the many splits of our childhood. We were wounded in childhood by our parents and teachers and relatives when they're basically looking at us like, you don't feel that or don't think that. And when we're in a place where we're really just being acknowledged for how we feel and what we're thinking, how powerful that can be. Because we're getting validated on every level of being simply just expressing and people seeing us and being able to express that back. Not judging it, but just, you know, hearing what it is and saying, okay, this is what you're saying.
Well, and I think they talk about validation and empathy, and he talks about that validation, for some people, validation of their thought processes is more important than validation of their feelings. But for others, empathy is the key to their healing. So, you know, it depending, of course, on the person, but that validation of what you're thinking and the validation of what you're feeling, which can be
interesting, because I don't think that's in our version.
Yeah. So I thought, yeah, so that's kind of how he distinguishes it. But validation of more, the thought process, and the empathy is more really validation of the feeling. Interesting, yeah? Mm-hmm. And it makes sense.
Well, one thing I appreciate, too, is with each of the different, additions, that they're adding the new research, they're adding new insights about what's working and coming in. Because I mean, we're talking over 30 years now of working with this process. And I really love, because I know that there's so many people that I know that, we do mirroring without even really saying, I'm going to mirror with you now. Is that okay? we're doing mirroring without, having it be like, let's sit and mirror. I think that's really, and like Amy, you're saying, it's part of sales culture. It's part of a lot of other ways that we are learning to have better communication skills just in general, just in society. And wait,
I know, but why is it only in sales? Come on, people, let's expand it from there. Right?
People need steel belt and tires. It's a good thing. Okay. Anyway.
But that tells you what a good tool it is. If it's used in sales, then you know it's a good tool.
Exactly. It's making you money. So let me the Imago workup, and they talk about you go through a guided imagery. I'm assuming that's in yours, where you look at what you needed as a child, what you didn't get, and you bring forward, what you need to learn and where that wounding. So another part that you guys we talked about, there's a subsequent exercise, which is the parent-child dialogue. And in the latest version, it's exercise 5, which I know is not in yours. They talked about how after doing the work, you said there a new workshop came up where couples deepen their awareness of their childhood wounds and increase their empathy for each other. Sitting face-to-face, one partner takes on the role of the caregiver, and the other partner imagines him or herself as a small child and talks to the caregiver from the child's point of view. And then they switch and go back and forth.
That could be extremely healing.
Oh, man, yeah.
Yeah.
With, if you're at the right place in your relationship, because it also could be kind of damaging if you're not in the right place.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So he's going to have a temper tantrum. I can just see it. Okay. Well, as always, 30 minutes goes super fast. Thank you, ladies. This is a very insightful and interesting conversation. And a great chapter.
You.
Chapter 9 is really, really great. Increasing your knowledge of yourself and your partner is very deep, can be very opening and just really sweet. When really, taking the time to love yourself and to love your partner and your significant others in a way that really serves everybody. So, we will see you next time here in the cafe. Well, next week we're going to talk about defining the curriculum, and it's one of the deep secrets of life is that all that is really worth doing is with those for another. I think that's so beautiful. Mr. Lewis Carroll.
Well, I want to honor all three of us for growing together through this work. So thank you both.
Thank you for including me, my sisters.
Yeah,
yay.
Absolutely. Yay. And we want to thank our international audience as well. Again, any questions, comments, ideas for anything, we'd love you to encourage to just reach out and contact us. And we just thank you for really checking in and always checking us out online. So thank you for calling, and thanks for having a great cafe with us. Thanks for joining us.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the Transformation Cafe podcast. To learn more, visit transformation-cafe.com for show notes, guest information, and links to previous shows. You can also subscribe to the Transformation Cafe podcast on iTunes. Join us again next time at the Transformation Cafe, a fun place to nourish your soul.